And just to let you know who's on, we have, I think, 27 or 28 community participants. There's a list of planning committee members. Charlie Boris Marty, who's on the Collaboratory Planning Committee, and the ARCS committee member as well, will be leading the presentation with input from other planning committee members and ARCS committee members as well. And the full participant list is on the eTown Meeting webpage. Okay. So everyone can see the new demands on Arctic science, and I'm handing it over to Charlie.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Helen. And actually, before I get started, I really did want to thank the ARCIS staff for helping to stage this particular, and as you'll see, many other events as a little bit of history on this whole initiative. And I've actually worked with several other groups, and a couple have tried to pull these WIMBA-type efforts, actually stage these things, and it's not a trivial task. So, again, big thanks to the ARCIS staff. I guess the way we'd like to handle this is that we have a few slides here. I guess the total is about 14 or 15. And maybe it's sensible for me to just kind of give everyone an overview of the thinking of the committee, of the planning committee, on this collaboratory idea, and then leave sufficient time open for questions. I guess the alternative would be to have questions as we go along, but I think perhaps it's good just to get some of the background material out of the way, and then we'll head back into an open discussion in maybe about 20 minutes or so. So this first slide here is entitled New Demands on Arctic Science, and I guess the word new demands are probably pretty carefully chosen, and although there are many, many scientists around the table today who hold near and dear the scientific questions that we all love to study, I think increasingly there are going to be demands for information on us that are very, very important in terms of what society is looking to us for advice on. And they're listed here. These are just a few bullet points, and I guess you probably are all up to speed on these, but I think it's really important to understand that these demands that are going to be placed on us for coherent information and actionable information from the policy community actually spans several arenas. First of all, and foremostly, the Arctic figures very, very prominently in the climate change question and hence U.S. and international policy on climate change. There's all manner of security challenges that are moving forward now that we have to worry about. An ice-free or seasonally ice-free Arctic Ocean is going to have all sorts of national and international security concerns. As you all know, there's infrastructure at risk, whether it be the melting of permafrost inland or in the coastal zone. Very, very important in terms of investments that have been made in civil infrastructure. Sea level rise is not only something that could affect the Arctic region, but the global system as well, and a substantial fraction of the world's population and a substantial fraction of the world's GDP either resides in or passes through the coastal zones of the world. And if we lose a substantial part of our cryosphere, it's going to be felt in many, many different parts of the planet. International cooperation has often been the hallmark of Arctic science, but it also may be called into risk as nation states make competing claims as the Arctic changes. Witness the planting of the Russian flag at the North Pole a few months back. There are certainly economic interests that are embedded in this issue of a changing Arctic in terms of resource extraction and shipping, etc. And the public not only needs to understand the full set of these issues, and they also need to understand why we are concerned about the changes we see unfolding. In that bottom right-hand panel, I'm not sure you could see it clearly, but that's a poster from the day after tomorrow, and I think the public deserves better than these kinds of sensationalisms. So the next slide is that in the context of the new science and the context of the new demands on the science, is this notion of trying to better understand how the Arctic works as a system. And NSF ARCS has been really instrumental, we believe, in terms of forwarding that notion, the idea that the Arctic is a system. How does it operate? What are its mechanics? How does it play itself out, how the changes in the Arctic play themselves out in the context of a larger Earth system, and how has all of this changed as a united planetary set of signals. We also recognize that these big-ticket systemic science questions can also motivate innovation, not only in the way we do science, but also the kinds of technologies that could be brought to bear on these major challenge issues. And it's also a means by which a new way of thinking about how to assemble science communities can be tested and engaged. And we'll be talking about that over the next several slides, and we want your feedback on the direction that this is all going. And, of course, it's absolutely critical if we're talking about the Arctic and the Arctic system changing and why it's changing, what it might look like in the future, how we could respond to all of this. That is directly involves an engagement of decision makers as well as the public, as I mentioned in the last slide. At the same time, we're faced with a fairly onerous scientific agenda. The Arctic is complex. And this cartoon here is one variant of many such cartoons with just about the same angle looking down at the Arctic and the interface between the landscape and the coastal zone and the ocean system. And it's very, very easy to see why it's a complicated system. It's got many, many different elements. Each single component has its own inherent complexity. But the big challenge is to understand how the whole thing is wired together. And in order to do that, we've got to think differently about how we do the science. It's no longer adequate for biologists to be just talking to other biologists or people who do atmospheric physics to just be talking to other atmospheric physics. We've got to join hands here and unite around some of these big challenge issues. At the same time we have this big intellectual challenge, we also have a big challenge in trying to cope with increasingly complicated and complex data streams, or here we call them information streams, that are increasingly becoming much more diverse in their types, in the types of themes they cover, in their scales, and in their sheer volumes. And so, for example, we've been using, as a community, these information sets to look at change detection, and perhaps as any part of the Earth where change has been well documented, I bet you it's the Arctic that change has arguably been best documented. And so we use complicated data sets and geospatial time series to figure out what's going on with the Arctic as a major element of the Earth system. We are developing, as a community, computationally intense simulation models of one type or another. And this one in the top middle, the landscape model showing change in permafrost dynamics over time. The Arctic could be a perfect place to be thinking about developing new and innovative sensor networks to monitor the trajectories of the change. We've already demonstrated as a community that the Arctic is changing. It's an important place for people to look. Now we have to come up with some of the tools and the approaches to monitor in cost-effective ways the changes that we think are going to be unfolding. We should do all we can to sustain observational networks. And those observational networks, even though they are in jeopardy, are providing enormously important information to us. And there are a variety of domains that we need to take stock of what information is out there, integrate them, and make them available to the community. The bottom middle diagram is one I like to show as an animation. It's from one of the NCAR high-resolution Earth system models. And it's just a testament to how far we've really come in terms of our ability to look at least the geophysics of some of these questions that we're trying to struggle with here. And we should not forget that this is not the domain of just the geophysicist or the biogeochemist. It also must necessarily involve the social sciences. And this bottom right-hand diagram is just emblematic of the rather sophisticated approaches that the social scientists are now taking as they begin to engage the geophysical and biological experts on some of these issues as well. So the issue of how we're going to deal productively and sensibly with these challenges, and in particular how data and modeling can be brought to bear on some of these big synthesis questions. That discussion's actually been going on for more than a decade, and I guess we could trace it back to discussions, very interesting discussions at the 1996 ARCS All Hands Workshop. Soon thereafter, there was a initiation of an ARCS SIMS AO, Synthesis, Integration, and Modeling Studies. That was a small program that attempted to get some early thinking going on this issue. More recently, and here's where things have accelerated a bit, back in 2003, ARCS Data Working Group, an ad hoc group, was formed within the ARCS Committee, and a data working group made a report on some ways forward in this realm. In 2005, the ARCS Committee itself made a set of recommendations to ARCS on a revised data management structure to really try to capitalize on some of these new challenges and new developments that could be brought to bear to help us think through these big system questions. In 2006, we had a first ARCS E-Town meeting in March. I think several of the names I see here on the WIMBA interface I've seen at that meeting as well. In 2006, at the last AGU meeting, we had a town meeting last December. We had a second town meeting, E-Town meeting, I should say, in 2007 in March, and that rapidly followed that in 2007 with a large group meeting in Seattle, synthesis workshop on data discovery and modeling. The remainder of 2007 has been devoted by this planning group to continue thinking through some of these issues and trying to engage a broader community in all this. 2008, we are anticipating a second workshop, and we'd like to think this through with the people on the phone here. And, of course, concurrent with all of this, happening at the same time, we had very major development of the search game plan. Some of the themes that today are alive within search and IPY and AON and SAON into the future. So what emerged from the April gathering was this idea of a Arctic Synthesis Collaboratory. And a collaboratory, I think we can reasonably say, is a fairly modern word. And actually, to prove that point, I looked up in my American Heritage Dictionary, which my parents gave me when I started my career back in 1978. And I looked up the word collaboratory, and it was not in there. So I think, unless I'm older than I think, I believe it's a relatively modern word. And actually, the same dictionary, interestingly, lists a similar word. It's called a collaborationist. And they define a collaborationist as a person who collaborates with an enemy occupying his country. Well, you should be sensitive to the use of our partners in the collaboratory and certainly not call them collaborationists. But anyway, this modern idea, and I think also this set of bullet points at the bottom of the slide is a testament to the fact that it's a fairly modern concept. It's now thinking about assembling networks of people who often would have been separated by often very huge distances. And a collaboratory is meant to support a recurring human interaction and a rich human interaction, not simply as in the old days, making a quick phone call or writing a letter longhand. It's really trying to create some depth and some realism, let's say, perhaps in a virtual sense, of what a real meeting of two people or groups of people be in face-to-face meetings. Because we can throw new technologies at this notion, we can actually think of bringing together researchers who have worked together personally and know each other, and those who don't know each other. And a collaboratory then at its heart must provide a suitable framework, suitable information sources and tools that would allow these people to participate kind of a distance mode, long distance mode, but do so in an effective and in a rich way. And I guess for lack of a better set of definitions, I think that that quite captures it. And this was from a University of Michigan report on the science of collaboratories. Okay, so the Arctic Synthesis Collaboratory, again, as articulated at that April meeting back in Seattle in 2007, was created as a set of component parts, and these are interacting components. And the four components are listed there. We first have a collaborative so-called meeting grounds, data and modeling, CI or cyber-enabled support services, second component. The third component is education, outreach, and policy. And the fourth component is scientist professional development. And again, we're trying to capitalize on this notion that it could take advantage of face-to-face meetings at real facilities, or it could potentially occur over a virtual space. So in the next four slides, we'll drill down a little bit into our thinking on each of these things. So in the next slide, we're going to talk about the synthesis meeting grounds. This is trying to capture the idea that in order to tackle these big questions, people have to work together. They may work together in person. They may work together in e-space. But in many cases, we're going to have to break down the barriers that have separated the different disciplines and the different languages that we often use, and also the geographic boundaries. And so we're going to try to pull this together in real and virtual space. The sum total of being able to do this in the right way is that we feel that we may be able to bring about an important transformation in not only the science, kind of foster breakthroughs in science, but also breakthroughs in the way we do science. If successful, we're going to be able to tackle some grand challenge issues and come up with some answers and deliver those answers and inform the policymakers. We also, however, would use this meeting grounds as a incubation vessel for new ideas. And hopefully, if this all operates correctly, we're going to have a whole series of really interesting and compelling new ideas that could be played out over the next several years of research. Again, we should be doing this in a policy-relevant framework, and this meeting ground should perhaps always include policymakers in these virtual or face-to-face meetings. And in order to make this happen, it's going to have to really rely on existing facilities, existing, let's say, bricks-and-mortar facilities, but as well new technologies to bring us together in a virtual mode. Component two, which is the next slide, is the actual engine for all this, which is the data and modeling CI-enabled support services. So it's recognized that in this day and age, if we're talking about Arctic system change and that early set of six graphics that I showed with the kinds of information and kinds of models that we're developing, it really has to do with cyber infrastructure and information technology. And one of our big challenges, as I mentioned when I explained that slide, is that we have to integrate across these disparate data sets and often disparate models that have been developed for a variety of purposes and have been developed in the context of the culture of different disciplines. So we really have a struggle ahead of us. I view it as a challenge and something that with suitable focus, we actually do something about to bridge those gaps. How do we harmonize data sets from different sources and from different themes and disciplines and scales and formats. How could we harmonize this so that we could join forces and tackle some of these big challenge issues? So the data and modeling support services really are the fuel, let's say, for the collaboratory team activities. It should also work with the developers of the tool sets to create a comprehensive way of going about business so that we don't have to struggle with all the day-to-day obstacles to getting the information into a coherent framework, integrating it, and allowing and facilitating analysis, statistical analysis, ingestion into models, and visualization. How can that step, which has been an obstacle to us, be overcome with some creative thinking about these services? And this is not a one-way street. We don't want to be pulling information always from the CI developers. We want to actually serve a very important function. The CI community is looking for uses for these new technologies, and we could actually be in the driver's seat if we articulate our needs. We could be in the driver's seat some of these cyber infrastructure developments over the next decade. Next component, which is our third, is actually something we term the Arctic Virtual Outreach Center. That's really attempting to facilitate the educational outputs of this initiative and outreach and the policy engagement, all CI-enabled, as we would imagine it. So this would allow us to be thinking about the kinds of outputs from our research that would arm the policymakers with very timely and relevant information, whether it be late-breaking news about what's happening in the Arctic to basically alert policymakers and the public about emerging rapid changes, such as the unprecedented loss of seasonal ice this year. But also look out a bit into the future and try to identify 5, 10, 15, 20, 50-year, 100-year challenges that lie out over the horizon. We also would use this outreach center to really develop and synthesize our information to audience-appropriate, or let's say age-appropriate outputs, so that we would stage graphics and virtual news flashes and curriculum material, K through 12 or early college, to really get the Arctic change issue even more on the public radar screen and to really allow them to better understand what's happening. I think we've caught the attention of the public and the young students, but it's quite another story to really educate them and really our understanding of these changes. Fourth component, next slide, is scientist professional development. And here we're talking about a system for training the next generation of scientists to really broaden the capabilities of the workforce. And we're talking about training and mentoring scientists quite literally at all career levels. And we think that different life stages of the scientists, the Arctic scientists, have valuable strengths and insights to share with each other. So, for example, where the mid-career and late-career Arctic system scientists probably have a pretty good notion of what it is to do synthesis and perhaps think about interdisciplinary science, it might be the younger generation that can help us with some of the new dimensions of the IT world. And we think that by casting a professional development effort at all levels and cross-fertilizing these different life stages of the professionals, that we'll really gain a lot of ground here. And in particular, I'm thinking for mid-career and late-career professionals, you know, advancing our united ability to handle some of these state-of-the-art data sets and tools is going to be really important. And we might find that our younger counterparts have an awful lot to teach us about how to do this stuff. We would envision doing this through virtual networked courses, perhaps some exchange programs, maybe some 2-3 week short courses, maybe some summer institutes, etc. And certainly we're looking for ideas on that. The next slide is really to remind us that the collaboratory is science-driven, and again, I think we shouldn't only draw from the CI world. I think we've got a lot to offer the CI world on how they could be spending their time developing community-enabling devices that we could really capitalize upon. And that first blue bullet point there, below the first round bullet, says it's science-driven and CI-powered. Probably in retrospect, we should have said science-driven, policy-informing, and CI-powered. I really think that that's important to remember. And this is perhaps a bit vague, and it's perhaps a big, big challenge, and we recognize that, so we need some focus. And perhaps the way forward, because we are a group of scientists coming forward with this idea, maybe we need to parse this out, and maybe we need to formulate some grand challenge questions and form some teams that could tackle these grand challenge questions using the collaboratory concept and using those four components productively to tackle, for example, how will Arctic change influence global ecosystem distributions, biota and ecosystem services, not just in the Arctic, but in the larger Earth system? How is the Greenland ice sheet changing, and why is it changing? That's a bit of an Arctic-centric question, but then what are the implications on the rest of the world, which is a global question? What is the driving, what are the set of driving forces behind the ongoing sea ice retreat? And perhaps more to the point, is it going to continue? And what potentially can we do with it? How will the Arctic change impact food security? Food security in the Arctic, food security in the oceans, food security in the lower latitudes. And as a final, just as an example question, these are certainly not meant to be comprehensive, and there are many, many other questions, but as the last one we just put down as a placeholder here is, what are the risks to Arctic and global coastal infrastructure now and in the future? We're probably going to have to answer that question whether we like it or not, because the policymakers are going to demand those answers. And maybe the collaboratory could be an important vehicle for getting some answers in a relatively efficient manner. Next slide, please, and these are the last couple of slides coming up. We have been thinking about a short-term and a longer-term strategy. And in the short term, it's, I think, quite important for the community at large to mobilize itself and really begin to take advantage of some important announcements of opportunity. There have been some recent AOs out of Cyber Infrastructure Office at NSF. There were two that come immediately to mind. First is the NSF Cyber-Enabled Discovery and Innovation Call. And second, for Sustainable Digital Data Preservation and Access Network Partners. It's called the DataNet effort. Already some groups have mobilized and begun that process. For example, this committee has responded to the request for a letter of intent for the CDI announcement of opportunity to really lay some of the foundations of the collaboratory, spreading a wide net of community. We would certainly like to learn of any others that are going in to know how the community has been gearing up to respond to these opportunities. Certainly, other groups are absolutely encouraged to respond to the relevant AOs. All we ask that as we move forward as a community, it would be very important that we try to stage these things in an optimal way, that we avoid a competitive environment to the highest degree possible and instead think about collaborating so that all boats might rise. And we're really dutiful in that in that that charge. We really will help to facilitate this on everyone's part. Also, as a short-term next step, we have this E-Town meeting. We're going to have an AGU town meeting, which we'll announce in two slides ahead. We are thinking about, perhaps in the spring of 2008, an implementation workshop. We're now crafting a project. It's in development. Look for that on the ARCS alerts. We're looking for help. Whoever wants to participate, we certainly would like your inputs. The next slide is, I think it's the next to the last slide. It talks a little bit about the longer-term game plan here. And we think that it's going to be very important to work with cyber infrastructure and information technology experts who have developed research networks. And we would like to perhaps propose the Arctic research community as a test bed in the earth sciences for this kind of thinking. We would work with these experts to plan out what the structure of this thing would look like in a little bit more detail, the kinds of tools we would be developing, how would you stage this and phase it so that all the parts kind of coming online in a sensible manner, and how would you govern this thing? Certainly, how we lay this out, the strategic phasing of this thing, is going to be quite important. We don't want one element or one component of this collaboratory idea to be scooting out way ahead of the others. How do we co-balance progress and make sure that it's progressing in an optimal way? It doesn't get out of hand and one component lags while another one prospers. What we're trying to do is we're trying to stage a dialogue with everyone around the table here. And we really, as a long-term objective, want to involve as many people as possible. It can't be just a small group of people drawn from this initial partnership. We've got to broaden this. Next slide is a set of discussion points. And these are just a set of questions that I think we'll have some time to articulate as we go forward. We'll have about, I think, 45 minutes now. These are just some questions to start us off. So what collaboratory components or activities that you've heard about are the highest priorities? Are there science, policy, education, or outreach needs that the current way we're thinking about this collaboratory would not meet? Are there gaps that we can identify immediately? What are some of the critical considerations or barriers that we need to jump over to make the collaboratory a successful idea? And when I say we, I'm talking about the whole community. And what kinds of activities or experiments in collaborations or whatever you might have on your mind would help ensure that the community could come together and participate in this in this common meeting space? And then, of course, other thoughts, ideas, and suggestions. So we're going to open this up to discussion. And I don't know, this is the last slide. Shall we hold off on this, ARCUS folks, and open this discussion, or should we hit that last slide and then move into the discussion?
I think let's just keep this discussion slide up, and we actually already have a question from Lil Alessa.
Okay, let's go for it.
Yeah, well, in the previous slide, she was asking about the letters of intent, and if anyone else had submitted a letters of intent. And Lil, are you on the phone?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, great. We can hear you come on.
Do you want me to ask the question?
Yeah, I guess re-ask it.
Sure. A group of us have put in an LOI for the TDI, and I was wondering how many other groups or how many other people had put these in and what the range was, because I liked Charlie's idea of collaboration versus competition.
Well, the committee itself had put in a letter of intent to try to move this forward, the next step, given all the concepts that I just talked about.
Okay.
So there are two right there.
Did the committee put in two?
No. I'm saying with Lil's and the committee's, that equals N equals two so far.
The third, I believe, was led by Dartmouth, but the National Snow and Ice Data Center was involved. And I think it's oriented around local and traditional knowledge.
Okay. Are ours was not particularly, in this ranking, Arctic focused. It was to develop a relatively new field called socioinformatics. And what this field does is it uses high-resolution data, uses the TerraGrid, if you guys are all familiar with the TerraGrid, and then agent-based models to basically understand and anticipate collapse dynamics in systems.
What we could also do is we could send out an announcement asking people to let ARCUS know what letters have been submitted so that we could at least document how many there were and what the scope of of themes have been.
Of course, it's completely voluntary for people to provide that information.
Right.
This is when I think it would also be worth asking if people are interested in providing that information, if they're looking for sort of collaborative partnerships of any sort, so that we can explore those possibilities as well. Because in some cases, a letter of intent and the idea for the proposal might not lend itself that well to a larger sort of integration or collaboration right at this point, but some might fit really well together. So
I think in some of the AO writings that I've seen, the word Arctic system or Arctic region at the minimum has actually come up. So I think we as a community are encouraged to make a stand in the CI world. And as we understand it, the competition for the CI grants is going to be quite ferocious. And so that's another reason why I think if we joined hands, we actually might do better than if we're just part of the chaos of the hundreds of letters that are going into the CI office.
And so I think Paul Thompson has a comment or a question.
Yes. Do I need to click on the hand again? Yes. This is Paul Thompson.
Okay. Go ahead, Paul.
Right. I did put in a letter of intent with the Snow and Ice Data Center, and as was said, one part of it at least did involve traditional knowledge, but I'm also interested in semantic interoperability issues in sort of cross-scientific disciplines in addition to the traditional knowledge.
Paul, did you say cross-semantic?
Semantic interoperability.
Okay,
well, we could we sort of go around the table, and that might be useful, but we also did wish to get a broader discussion going, which is actually shown on the WIMBA interface right now. So I guess I would ask the general question of the people around the table, what are your impressions? First of all, if you've heard it only for the first time, we're very interested in gaining your impressions. Some of you have also followed the thinking for a while, and I guess we'd like to do a reality check because we've been trying to take inputs from the community at large and trying to reflect it back onto the thinking here. So I guess for those who are new to the whole process, maybe we could start with anyone who's new to the process. If you have an opinion about what you've just seen, does it seem to resonate? Does it make any sense? Is it going off in a strange direction? Whatever you feel, we would be very, very interested in hearing what your first response is to these notions. Is there anyone who's not followed this for too long and might have a first impression to share with us?
I think Andrew Balzer has his hand raised.
Yeah, good, the button worked. I haven't been following this discussion relevant to the ARCS program, but having just seen this presentation, it strikes me that there are some very obvious linkages that could be made with collectively informatics-based efforts. Some of the ones that come to mind are within eco-informatics, and they're three efforts that, while they're new and they're kind of early in the developmental stage, might offer a nice framework to answer some of the questions for data management and collaboration that you're posing. So I guess if I'm going to phrase this in a question, it is, to what degree have you already established some of these working relationships And are you interested in maximizing them? And if you, if you'd like me to give examples of some of the initiatives I'm thinking of, I can do that.
Please do so. I think that would be good to hear.
Sure. Well, one of them I'm familiar with is ecoinformatics.org, and it's an effort based at NCES at Santa Barbara, and it's also supported by the LPR network.
Yep.
And in a nutshell, what it's trying to do is very high-level integration of data from disparate sources and producing what are right now, they're targeted products that actually produce results, but they're also kind of templates for how do you approach this sort of problem. And their website's actually pretty informative. It's just ecoinformatics.org. And they're focused primarily on just answering the scientific questions and going cross-disciplinary. Another one that sort of struck me is the Ecoinformatics Collaboratory, and this one is at UVM at, I believe it's the Gund Institute. And it's the Gund Institute for, I think it's ecological economics. And its focus is similar in the sense that it's trying to help bridge cross-disciplinary gaps, but it's coming at it from a slightly different angle, which is to provide a platform for policymakers and people interested in natural resources management. And then I guess the third one that sort of strikes me is I think it's called the Ecoinformatics Initiative. And what's interesting about this one is that rather than trying to put together a lot of real specific tools right now, it's trying to bring together people from different international organizations and start to take a top-down look at how you engineer this sort of thing from the standpoint of bringing together all the information necessary for international policy.
Well, that seems as though it's quite harmonious with what we're talking about, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Are there any comments from the crowd about that? That seems like it would be quite interesting to try to perhaps pull into some of our thinking here. Are there any hands up? I can't see
yep,
right
there
now.
Sure. Steve Roof. Steve,
Andrew, do you have a hand up?
I don't, but I could add one comment, which is, I guess it's stating the obvious, but sometimes that's okay. It seems to me that this initiative within ARC might be a nice opportunity to approach some of these organizations and, on the one hand, give them, in the same way you were saying that different people with NCI are looking for applications, to a certain degree, I think these initiatives might be as well, based on my read of what they've been doing. And it might be a nice way to sort of leverage benefit for everybody. You know, they get some real targeted questions. ARCS gets the background and legwork already done by these groups.
Okay.
And
does Stephen have his hand? I guess I'm reading this wrong. I thought your hand was up, Andrew. Sorry to put you on the spot there.
No problem.
Is Stephen's hand up?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
This is Steve Roof, and I guess I just wanted to offer my initial thoughts about this. I haven't heard much about this at all, but very interested in this sort of coordination effort. And I guess my first vague sense is like, oh, no, not a bunch of more meetings or things for me to do. But beyond that, I work with the Svalbard REU program, and we're looking for ways to get our data coordinated that we've been collecting for the last 6 or 7 years, a way to take that data, make it available for school teachers. So we're looking for ways to do that outreach that you showed in those earlier slides. And I don't have any good ideas for how to make that effective. ARCUS is we're doing some really neat stuff with the Polar Trek program and the school teachers. So we're getting the teachers to have some experience and then take it back to their classrooms. So that works. So other than it being a bit of a fear of wandering into a huge time commitment, I think it's a good program. And if there's an infrastructure set up that we could easily insert our data or insert activities that we developed or other outreach nuggets, that would probably be the easiest thing for someone like me to participate in.
Right. I think the key word in terms of the collaboratory is facilitation of all of these different thrusts. So that, I think, would be the idea. And, geez, if there were a platform that you could plug directly into and you found that it made your life easier, perhaps others would as well, and then we would gain some momentum and have several partners around the table doing just what you're saying.
That would be great, yes.
I still see Andrew's hand up. Is this an error?
It is. I didn't hit it twice.
Sorry.
Maybe I just need to click elsewhere in the window to release it or something.
No, you just click the hand again and it should go down. There you go.
Okay. Sure it does. Okay.
Oh, another hand has come up. Jim.
Yeah, I thought I'd jump into the silence here. One main thought was that in moving forward and sort of attracting the input of people that haven't been bouncing around in the inner circle of this sort of developing collaboratory idea, it would be really helpful to sort of make a really clear distinction between the efforts to build the collaboratory and the ultimate goal of how it's going to be used. And I think a lot of people might be able to provide some insight about how they might use that collaboratory that would help it be built. But also, I think in the shorter term, announcements of opportunity or ways to move forward with funding the building of the collaboratory. You don't want to lose track of all those users when it may be a number of years before the technical aspects are worked out. So I'm not sure if I'm coming across really clearly, but the general idea is that I think there's going to be some time lag while the sort of technical aspects of this are built. But at the same time, its ultimate purpose to foster collaboration. We'd like to have the users on board really early.
Right. And that's one reason we're really thinking that in 2008 it would be important to make sure that we have a gathering of the clan, so to speak, and make sure that the right people are around the table. We had, I think, in Arcus, do you have the number of people who were at the April meeting back in 2007? It was about 52 or something like that?
Yeah, it was
on
about...
hand. And then there were like 30 or so others that...
Yep, that joined virtually.
Yep. So we had a fairly good cross-section of the community. And I guess right now we're really thinking that to take this the next step, we have to make sure that there's a sufficient clarity of purpose in doing this whole thing. And as I'd mentioned during the formal part of my talk, we have to make sure that one element doesn't scoot out ahead of the next, because I think that would really create chaos in terms of the whole game plan. So I think your point, Jim, is very well taken. I think we've got to simply think about that very clearly. Mark Parsons, I see your hand has gone up.
Yeah, hi. This is only sort of half-baked, but Jim's comments got me to thinking. Yeah, there's technology development that's necessary, but we must have things existing now. I mean, people are collaborating, and I'm thinking in terms of what you're saying, Charlie, in terms of the phasing of this. Maybe need to lay out a schedule, and what are the things that we could implement immediately that would enhance collaboration? And you know, the things that, like Facebook, literally leap to mind, you know, and maybe not Facebook itself, but those social networking type of softwares. But then to me, then the big hurdle there, the barriers that you allude, is the participation. You know, it's not a technology issue, it's engaging the people in this. And the senior scientists, quite frankly, they already have their collaborative networks. And so what's the incentive structure for them to participate in this? Those to me are sort of some of the critical issues, is looking at what might be working now and then how we could extend that in sort of a simple way, not as a first step towards this larger vision, because I'm really having a hard time getting my hands around this larger vision of what this collaboratory would actually be.
Yeah. Well, let me just back up a little bit and just explain a little bit of our motivation for thinking a bit more broadly about all of that.
Before you do that, Charlie, can I comment on Mark's suggestion? Mark, I think that is a really, really good suggestion, that we start in some very concrete ways identifying pieces that could be implemented, that we could start to implement right now, would move this process forward, and also a lot of the concept would change as we develop these really concrete things that can be done now. So I really second your recommendation.
That's quite on the mark, Mark. It's quite on the mark, Mark. But it's also important to go back to the motivation for our thinking about this in the first place. And it goes back to some of those early slides where I made the statement that ARCS is really trying to foster this new kind of science to look at synthesis and system level change. And the data structures and the thinking about data that we had 10 years ago in the Arctic sciences community is no longer sufficient to get the job done. And what we really are trying to do here is we're trying to promote a new vision about how data and modeling, that's our mainstay, how data and modeling specifically can be used to break down those interdisciplinary barriers and get us to the point where we could be thinking about the integral behavior of the whole system. And that's why we're pushing on the data and modeling CI services. That's going to be really one of the important components to move us beyond just the simple archiving function of a data center to something that really brings it alive for the community. To the degree we could take existing pieces of computer code and put them to work for that purpose, that's great. We should absolutely do that. But I think in the long term, we may have to have a little bit of a game plan in terms of filling technological gaps that go beyond these off-the-shelf kinds of tools. Maybe we have to think with the developers of these tools in new and interesting ways about how we can get our business done in a more efficient way. So that's kind of underpinning, that thrust there is underpinning much of why we're here today talking about all this stuff. But to the highest degree possible, yes, we should pull things right off the shelf and put them to work for us.
So, yeah, so absolutely, Charlie. We need that big vision because we need to be aiming for something. And so maybe what I'm hearing is that we need that big vision, and then there's maybe some initial immediate steps, which you know may or may not be off the shelf approaches. And it may not even be a technological issue for these first steps.
Right.
And then there's the medium somewhere in between, the transition between this initial first steps of enhancing collaboration, you know, maybe some pilot collaboration projects around some of those key questions you identified. But then what's in the middle? How do we move that into this big vision? There seems like there's a big gap there that I have a hard time getting my hands around.
Yes, there is in fact that gap, and that's one of the reasons we have to continue very assertively planning this whole thing. And that would, for example, be one of the big ticket issues on the agenda of a next workshop sometime in 2008. John, I think you put your hand. John Weatherly, I think you put your hand up.
I did. Thanks.
Yeah, okay.
Let me stick my hand off there. Let me say, some examples, you know, we've thrown around both between last year's workshop meeting and other things. You know, the question is what are the forms or ways of, you know, of using things that are out there now? There are, you know, certain things that can be applied to this area. And I've, you know, and I've toyed just with various ideas of, you know, what things kind of can move this forward. And there's different models. I mean, there's even almost like the Wikipedia kind of model, which can be you know, continued collaboration between sciences and policy and the widespread community, and including traditional knowledge into a compendium of addressing different things like, well, what do the scientists know about you know, rural food, you know, rural food sources and how that applies. So the Wikipedia is a you know, one kind of model that, you know, if we take that and we say, well, if we have an open exchange between these things, that there's a connection, and then, you know, the way that IT background that or infrastructure that lets scientists overlay different, you know, the interdisciplinary data, models, and things, that I think those are the kinds of things that are available and can be applied to these questions of you know, how is the Arctic changing, what is the big picture, and then what do people see as changes and go into that. So I think those are, there's, I think, a number of different examples of models of things that could be put forward that people, that different communities can interact, both scientists and policy and the outreach community, can sort of see that there is a community out there that's applying to these problems and that they have something to say about it. And I think that in the same way that you know, different, you know, open network concepts have, you know, changed the way we do things and do work and do science, I think that's a chance to, some model like that can be, I think, built upon to change the way we do this synthesis of change in the Arctic and its effect on the global system. So that's just one example. I'm trying to lay out examples of how some of these things might come to fruition with things that are happening, the things that are available now.
Just going back to my earlier query, are there any other newcomers to the crowd that have any first blush reactions to what we've talked about? And if not, people who have been following this a bit, what are some of your current thoughts about all this?
This is Wendy again. I would like to spend a little bit of time talking about and following up on two parts of Mark Parson's suggestion. One part is, it seems like it's going to be really important to talk about phasing, but phasing in the context of both what is possible now with what we know, who we have, the infrastructures that are available, the off-the-shelf kinds of things, as you said, Charlie, but also in the context of what pieces need to exist before other pieces can be built on top of them. So that's two pretty important aspects of development and planning and talking about phasing. But the second part is I'd really like to spend some time brainstorming about what kinds of things could be done now, by whom, and how they would benefit us if we could put some support into and some effort into pulling those pieces together into structures. So looking at not just what's possible, but why it's needed and what we could gain from doing that. I don't know if I was very clear in my what I said, because I'm just thinking out loud, but I think it'd be worth taking some time to talk about those two things.
It's a good idea. So let's open it up. Talk about the phasing first.
Oh, I think actually it might be more useful to talk about the what could be done now. And to me, that it isn't always the most sensible way, but the way that what could be done right now starts to come together is through what things we really urgently need to be able to do right now. So I'm interested in whether Mark could say a little bit more about his thinking on that. That's a question, Mark.
Yeah, this is Mark again. I don't know if I have a lot more to say on my thinking about that, but I'm thinking of proposing a different model. How does collaboration work now, and recognizing that we want to extend that to broader questions with more complex data issues and so forth, but scientists find that they have common interests through meetings, through publications, through referrals, what have you. They start talking to each other. They realize, hey, we've got a common problem. Then they maybe start identifying what the relevant data are. They figure out how to share that data. Maybe they come up with some standards for their own particular study. I mean, the RIMS example, Charlie, where you all came up with a standard on how you were going to provide that data and make it available through your SPIFFI interface. I'm wondering if we can't use that. I mean, it seems to me we would follow essentially the same model, but what we're trying to do is do it at a bigger scale in a more virtual space.
Right.
And I don't know how, and so I get stuck at step one in getting the conversation started. I mean, we're seeing that right here, that it's difficult when you got 20 people, faceless people, on the phone getting the conversation started. How do we do this in a collaborative virtual space? I mean, when people have a good idea and they're committed to something, they will start collaborating around a wiki or a social network or even just sharing emails. But if they don't, then those tools are useless. So maybe we need, you know, a focused problem, a focused team to sort of test some of these concepts.
Yeah,
sorry, I'm just sort of thinking out loud here.
I really agree with that point. I think that's a really important point. We have built various kinds of support structures to facilitate collaboration, and what we've observed over the years, Wendy, at Arcus, is that they just sit there unused unless and until there's a really important common problem and people are motivated by that problem or that need or that desire to participate in them, no matter how sophisticated and beautiful the tools are. So I really think you're right, Mark, starting with the what is the problem that we want, what are the really important problems that we want to resolve, which is where those of us that worked on the collaboratory planning group's letter of intent, that's the direction we were trying to take, is organizing around a problem rather than the development of infrastructure.
You know, at the last workshop in Seattle in April of 07, we actually threw out some big challenge questions, which we sort of backed off of as the thinking had developed. But I'm wondering, now that we have a bit clearer idea of what the collaboratory is all about, that maybe we need to start once again thinking about creating some questions, maybe some test questions, you know, some early examples of how you could start to bring some small teams together and test out these ideas and really actually get started using some existing tools for the purposes of tackling some, maybe not grand challenge questions, but perhaps some system-wide but more manageable questions, and then use that experiment perhaps to compare notes a few months later, maybe a year later, set the groups working together, and then come back and talk about lessons learned. You know, how did it go when you pulled Facebook out and you modified it to try to understand something about sea ice and brought your team together, and then someone else is using YouTube. You know, who knows what creative solutions using existing technologies might be actually thrown at these questions. That's just an idea.
I like that idea, Charlie, and I think to add to it, there would need to be some imperative to try to approach it, because otherwise people are going to fall back into their old habits.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know, and there, so there's a learning curve, but maybe once you get over that curve, the collaboration is actually smoother and goes faster. It leads to better development of education products, et cetera.
Yeah, I think you're right. We tend to go back to what we do best, and often it's not working in collaborative teams on some of these big questions. I can tell you from experience with FWI that it really took a lot of cultivating this idea that we should be working on some synthetic issues that allowed us to do so, but it took care and attention the whole time. And Jonathan Punsack, he's not on the line here, but he could have shared with you many of the challenges in doing so. So there has to be some motivating force, and I think that we do need facilitation at one level. I don't think it's automatic. I think we're really going to have to nudge this a little bit in a gentle enough fashion to make it attractive to people to do so, but yet strongly enough to get them to do so.
Maybe there needs to be someone if around that sort of experiment, someone that's charged with sort of pushing people in new directions and exploring new technologies and trying to implement them or something. Because frankly, I'm thinking about it, you know, what is my incentive to do things differently if I'm getting things done just fine right now and I'm overwhelmed right now? Why do I need to participate in another discussion forum or learn a new set of tools for sharing data, and that sort of thing.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll put my hand up. This is Jim McClellan again. I was just thinking about what Charlie just said, and I think one advantage of the collaboratory concept is that these collaborations like the freshwater integration stuff or snacks or various things that call for proposals that bring us together for some period of time come and go, and to have something that provides continuity that's not directly tied to these initiatives would, I think, foster longer term sort of and perhaps evolving into higher level collaborations than we've seen in the past just because of the continuity.
Yeah. We're going to have to throw all sort of a manner of experience at this issue, I think, as a team. And ARCUS has been really great at facilitation. What do the ARCUS folks think about how much cajoling, nudging, benevolent dictatorship is required to get us to be doing things along these lines?
I think just as Wendy and as Mark pointed out, that the point is if there's motivation and there's a good science question, they don't need any. There is no cajoling that's needed. They have the tools and they come to it, but there definitely has to be that focus and kind of internal motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yet if there is that automatic motivation based on interesting science, there's still, as we have kind of surveyed the community, there's still this idea that if you're truly going to be doing interdisciplinary science, you better have your act together on some of the facilitation issues with respect to the data exchange and the kinds of models.
Yeah.
And the fact that if we are going to cross those boundaries, you need a kind of a lexicon or a translation system to make sure that when you use the same words, one expert from one discipline understands what the other is saying. And so there still could be these very important, let's say, oilings of the gears, you know, the lubricants, to make sure that we don't get snagged, because we have time and again heard that, you know, there are all sorts of different data protocols and data standards and metadata commitments that different communities have made. And I still think that those kinds of hurdles, because we've heard about them so many times, are still going to be there. And
yes.
So the collaboratory should be in business to try to facilitate the interactions and kind of overcome those obstacles.
So this is Wendy. I agree with that, but I also think that any infrastructure, any collaborative synthesis-focused infrastructure that's actually going to work needs to be one that's really flexible and expansive, in the sense that there is one thing we have learned over and over is there is no way that you can really accurately plan for, assess future needs in this kind of area. I mean, to some extent you can, but the changes and the ways that people work together so quickly transform both the needs, the products, the direction that tools develop in, that it's really quite hard to anticipate correctly or completely in advance all of those. And so I think that whatever as we think about what we're going to develop, it needs to be modular and also very, very flexible, and to be able to, rather than, you know, heavily institutionalized or codified, in order to be really responsive to the rapidly changing needs. And that, partly why I say that, is that I find my brain, when I try to think of the collaboratory as we talk about it and envision it, even if we have our nice little four categories, when I try to think of it as all in one piece, as this thing that exists and how that would work and the lexicon that you just talked about, I tend to have a little short-circuiting problem in my brain. But when I start thinking about it in very concrete terms in the pieces, the smaller pieces, that this thing could be done right now, and that would help this process, and that would help this whole area of people work together more effectively, working on data issues or working on this piece, then it's much more tractable for my particular small brain. But when I try to look at the thing as a whole, it's very hard to encompass. And I think that's partly because there's really no way right now to accurately forecast sort of the whole thing, where it would go, where these pieces would go, and even how the pieces would interconnect with each other. That may be the same point Mark was making. I'm not sure if I was understanding his point correctly or not.
I'm sorry, I'm not on Windows, so I can't raise my hand. I think that's actually really a lot of the beauty of the whole idea, in that if we took it, the pieces that are needed now, let's just use the RIMS, the University of New Hampshire RIMS project as an example. That was developed as a need, and that facility or that data archive then allowed some collaboration to develop, and it really grew in response to not just the need, but also the ability. Since it was there, people could work together, and it really advanced the science just because it was there. So, you know, if you build it, they will come. But we could carry that forward as far as the collaboratory can grow in that respect, in that we take the components and we add them as we go along. And so you're right, we can't totally envision where we're going to take us in the end, but that's okay. We grow as we can.
Yeah, this is Andrew Balser. A lot of these points are things that I would strongly second, and much of it comes from some of the workshops that actually ARCUS has helped facilitate and sponsor that are, in this case, just relevant to GIS and spatial data, but the concepts apply to this as well. And some of the things that have been learned kind of repeatedly now are that scoping comprehensively but building incrementally and doing what you can now is a way to solicit feedback from the user community and allow it to be flexible and grow in the direction it needs to. These are things that other groups scoping these types of concepts have found to be important too. I know that Helen and Bill Manley have been involved in some of these conversations relevant to GIS, and they might have some other comments related to that.
In this context, I think we would probably have a lot to gain by creating a rich set of experiments to try different things out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. I think we can't be really considering something monolithic. We have to be considering something that is very organic, that responds to the opportunities as they're coming up. And I think a good way to do that is to actually seed a bunch of different activities that we can then come together on and share our experiences, how it's actually gone. And we might find that there's some very interesting and novel approaches that a set of planners would never have even considered, because they're not actually doing it.
Charlie, this is Wendy again. For example, I was very excited and encouraged to hear about the letters of intent submitted by the several different groups for the CDI solicitation. I think as you said, this is going to be a very, very competitive process. If any one of those proceeded into a pre-proposal and was encouraged to submit a full proposal and then was funded, any single one of them could contribute tremendously toward our goal of this sort of integrated approach to Arctic research and the Arctic Collaboratory. And I think the more of those kind of developmental processes that we can seed and encourage and then stay connected with, the more it will further advance this whole process for the benefit of the larger community.
I think unless someone has a rabbit in the hat, we are not anticipating at all that the collaboratory in one fell swoop would be funded. It's going to be very opportunistic, and it's really going to be the pieces of it that are going to be coming together. And even some of the components themselves might be constituted around several proposals that are funded. So
So I think these last 5 or 10 minutes of discussion are, I think, reflecting the reality of this thing. And I think very creatively, might add.
Charlie, one comment on that. I like this idea of experiments and maybe taking different approaches. And you're absolutely right. This is not going to just spring whole cloth out of nothing. But with those experiments, I think what would be helpful, and it would be actually fairly challenging and be a sort of a shift in the scientific culture, I think, would be to have them as open as possible. So there's maybe only a dozen people who are actively collaborating around a science question, but as they're discussing and sharing data and so forth, if that's open to a broader community, they can learn from that and see that you're going to get more out of it. But that's going to be a challenge because of the academic strictures that we work in and the competitive world that we're in. But I think that openness, where possible, would be key.
We also could take stock of activities that have already occurred. We have 3 or 4 working groups that we could tap experience off of and actually create the little vignette of each, and just kind of laying out some of the hurdles and successes that we think we achieved. And that's probably true of the SNACS initiative, and the new SAS teams that probably would be able to share that as well. And before you know it, we might actually have an interesting little library of ideas to then tap off of, and as this moves forward, we could actually test them still further.
Yeah, this is Bill Manley. I guess I'd like to comment on that. Earlier I was going to say that ARCS doesn't have to reinvent the wheel here. There are a lot of examples of successes out there, and Andrew mentioned some, and also there's a lot of successes for standards and metadata and data sharing and immediate needs for data centers. And so, Charlie, something you said earlier struck a bell with me, and that is these metadata standards, data standards for sharing, they exist, but somehow there's a gap between that existence and actually broad utilization of them and successes for the entire community. So I'm wondering, what are those successes of adopting strategies broadly that have worked before that maybe ARCS can emulate?
Sounds like the big question, eh? And what are some of the opportunities we have for testing out still newer ideas that we might not have tried already?
Charlie, this is Helen. So a thought to kind of start coalescing some of these ideas in an informal framework, and kind of getting back to one of Mark's points, is would participants on this eTown meeting be interested in starting just a wiki, kind of an informal something where we can kind of collect these ideas and collaborate and communicate to start seeding these different activities? Does that mean no?
I think it means people can't quite envision what that would be or how it would work.
Yeah, this is Maribeth here. I can't put my hand up because it's full, but we talked about this actually within the HART community, and there was, I think people are, we might be headed there trying to do that, but there was such a disparity in experience that we ended up with the same kind of a silence, Helen.
Mm-hmm.
Not because people didn't want to do it, because you know.
So something like 90% of things like that, little tools like that, just don't get used. And then things come along that for whatever reason just go crazy, and everybody uses them, and they work really effectively. And there's a lot of research on that exact question: what makes some really useful, even in social networking sites like Facebook or MySpace? Mm-hmm. Why, even if they look clunky and stupid, and people initially that aren't early adopters just can't see how this could possibly be useful at all, they go, they just take off, and then the not early adopters in 2 or 3 years are there using them along with everybody else. So, that's one of the big questions that we have, is what's the difference? What makes the difference between a tool that really works, that people just even people that aren't early adopters can kind of instantly see, oh yeah, this is going to advance my research, this is going to really help us do what we need to do, this is really informative, I'm going to take the time to put information here or whatever, versus the ones that just sit there and don't get any traffic at all. So the silence at the wiki suggestion, that's what it tells me, is it's just not clear without something visual or something to look at or see whether that would be useful or not, whether that it would actually inform and support this thinking co-development process that we're kind of engaged in on the phone right now.
You know, Wendy, I think maybe part of the reason that you got silence for the wiki suggestion is not because we don't understand what a wiki is, or the particular nature of this wiki and how it would be structured, but I mean, the immediate thought that when it came up to me is like, well, do I have time for that?
Yeah, exactly.
What's my incentive?
Yeah, exactly.
What am I going to get out of it?
What do you got out of it?
Yeah,
exactly.
Precisely. So if you do, if you know what it is and you know how to use it, it's
like, that's the critical question. It's not the tool.
Yep. Well, so the reward of using it has to be sufficient to make the time effort manageable. That's the equation that we've noticed over and over, is if the reward is sufficient, people take the time to do it. So
one of the objectives of the whole initiative is to try to figure out, really, what is the best way to execute synthesis. So at some point, and I don't know when it is, at some point, for the collaboratory idea to be a viable one and one that produced something as part of that package of outputs, I think we've got to have a lessons learned document or something along those lines to let others know who are engaged in this synthesis and system-wide thinking what seems to have worked, what didn't. And then we learn from that ourselves as we move forward. So I think that as we're talking here, I think yet again this idea of experiments, some potentially high risk, but they may yield very interesting insights. They need to get started. They need to go forward. And some are going to not do so well, but some others may do quite well. And we should really study what's going on there. And perhaps even more formally, if any of these cyber infrastructure AO proposals hit, we should try to peel away a certain quantity of resource to study this very issue.
I'm taking a poll on Horizon Limba. I'm taking a poll and asking everyone that knows what a wiki is and has used one to raise their hand.
Well, okay, so I'm conflicted because I know what it is, but I've never used one.
Yeah,
wrong question.
Yeah.
Who's used one and doesn't want to use one? Does everyone know how to vote?
The hands, so that's working. Yes. Okay. That's good. That's actually really informative. And how about everybody that would never wants to have to use a wiki again if they can help it? Put a no. Click on no.
There's no voting.
Okay. That's good. Okay. Excellent. So I think Mark's point is right, that most people are quite familiar with this kind of tool now, and the issue is the reward sufficient? So thank you for participating in my little poll. Okay, so
well, I'm just wondering if right now, when are we winding up here?
Right now.
Oh, we are? Okay.
Yeah, we're running out of time now.
Yep.
Okay. So might I make the suggestion that ARCUS help create a little bit of distillation of some of the important and key points, and I think that we're certainly not going to be able to resolve this at the moment, but I think an important point that's come up here is how can we really get started tangibly and fairly quickly? Yet, you know, still have the broad game plan, but have that game plan reflect the reality that this is going to have to come in pieces. We're not going to be able to tear off the whole chunk at once. And what are some ways in which we could come together, maybe capitalizing on existing activities that ARCS has already funded,
But just kind of put it into the context of what we're thinking about with respect to the collaboratory. Maybe take this idea of maybe using some of the existing technologies and maybe issuing a challenge to some of these small teams to try to work some of these things with these technologies and then report back to us, maybe during another eTown meeting or maybe during the workshop in 08. But I think it's important to get some early stuff going, and I thought we've had some pretty interesting thoughts put on the table here. So I guess, Arcus, would you be able to maybe crystallize some of the discussion here into maybe a few main bullet points that we can then use to maybe re-motivate the community at the actual town meeting? And maybe, Helen, in the spirit of this, could you pop it off to the next slide?
Yep. Yeah,
so, Charlie, we could mention the face-to-face town hall meeting at AGU. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, that's on this last slide. So first of all, the eTown meeting we've just had, you'll be able to get hold of it for your own needs. I guess immediately, when does this stuff get posted?
Yeah, the PowerPoint is already on the eTown meeting page, and the archive would be in about an hour or two.
Okay. Beyond that, we're going to get together face-to-face at AGU on the first day, or I guess on Monday, 10 December, 7:30 p.m., Moscone Center West, room 3004. So hopefully a lot of you will be around that room, and we should really hash this out a little bit more. And as a prelude to that, again, if Arcs, you could maybe take some of this discussion and create the key bullet points. Maybe we could use that as the focal point for the discussion on site, and I think we could take it in interesting new directions then.
And what we'll do, Charlie, is we'll draft some key discussion points from this eTown meeting and just circulate it amongst all the participants, the eTown meeting participants,
yeah,
so we can
absolutely
iterate that as a group via email and then go from there. Yep.
Absolutely. Any other issues, any other logistical issues or anything like that? Any other comments on what we've talked about? Okay.
Well,
big thank you to everyone.
Yeah, I want to thank everyone for getting on and participating today. I think some really interesting ideas were put forward.
Yeah, very useful discussion. I found it extremely useful. And we'll keep everyone in the loop on this. And hopefully, I know everyone's time is very short, but hopefully we'll be able to take this forward as a community. And we really are committed to that. So great. Well, thanks, everyone, and hope to see lots of you at the AGU Town Hall meeting.
Okay, thanks,
all right, thanks, Charlie.
Thank you.
Signing off.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone.